All right, y'all ready to get going?
Whenever you
So
want.
I'm not gonna wait. We supposed to add two other people, but there's always gonna be somebody that's gonna fall out the game. But what's going on? Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Stirring the Pot podcast. Today we have an exciting conversation. We're going to be talking about the importance of the security field. We're going to talk about different things of security in faith-based organizations, security in corporate America. We're going to be talking about the aspect of security in the communities of the different places that we live, if you would. We have myself and two other security professionals on here. My one buddy Chris Conrad and my man Manny. Well, how you say the last name, Manny?
Manolo, Manny
Manolo.
Manolo.
See, I was gonna mess
I'm gonna
that up,
butcher.
man.
I'm gonna say.
I was
I'm gonna
gonna mess
butcher.
that up.
I'm not
So,
bad. I don't mean to be a jerk, but I'm bad with names.
if y'all would like, one of y'all go first and just give like just a little background. You ain't gotta give a whole biopsy or or whatever the case is. Just tell like a little bit of your experience, where you've worked, whatever you want to share. Is you don't have to share nothing that you don't want to share, but just tell the people a little bit about yourself. Y'all, whoever want to go first can go.
Go ahead,
All
man.
right.
Go. Okay. Manny Manolo, as he said, my name is Manny Manolo. I've been in the security industry and the security business for more than 19 years. I worked in several different companies, organizations, also as well as church, and I've traveled as well as working in the Act 235 security industry for about 18 years myself. I've done all sorts of clubs, nightlife, private security, like bodyguarding. So I've been pretty much around.
Cool.
Me, I'm a baby to these guys. I'm about 5 years in actual security, 9 years military. That doesn't mean anything in security over here. So, I'm armored trucks and mostly just security companies. I do synagogues with them as well, but I haven't been as broad as you two. But I've been in Philly, so I get to see it on fast forward. Too many fights, too many attempted stabbings, one shooting,
Of course,
Average day
of
on
course.
Kensington half. Yeah.
Every day, live
Yeah. And you learn a few tricks.
Yeah,
My favorite's
you learn a thing or
the
two.
carry around a cooler. Nobody figured out why. I kept frozen rags in there. Whenever you get two women fighting, just put the frozen rag on their neck. They run away. Works every time, swear to God.
I guess so I don't make you guys feel awkward, I guess I need to give a little background on myself. My name is Gary Bryant. I'm a security professional. I've worked in security probably the last 9 years plus. I've done everything from nightclubs to church security. I've done a few synagogues. I've done movie sets, TV shows. And I am a corporate security specialist right now in a U.S. government contractor. I've probably have seen it all. I've seen people pull up to the club with guns that some of the security guys weren't ready for.
Absolutely.
I've dealt with people who would tell us to clear the block because they're going to clear the cops out too. I've dealt with it all. I've dealt with domestic violence situations. I've dealt with a plethora of security issues in my life, and that's kind of part of the reason why I enjoy this field so much. It's always something different, but I believe that most of the time, good security will make you feel like you don't need security. I've learned security tactics from from people in Philadelphia, people in Colorado, people in California. And it's, security is done differently everywhere. So that's why when they say things like there's always more than one way to skin a cat, trust me, everyone does the game differently. East Coast basketball players play a lot different than West Coast and Midwest. Same thing.
Don't go bringing sports into this. You know I don't know anything about.
You know, comics.
I'm not gonna get those
Marvel,
metaphors.
Marvel comics and DC comics are a little different.
I'm a nerd.
Yeah, he's a comic guy. He's a
nerd,
comic
but
guy.
I'm a nerd.
So, one of the things that wanted me to bring up this conversation, I don't know if I want to call it a nerd. I like to do a lot of research. I like to do research on different things, especially if I don't know something or if I'm not well versed. I like to do research so that if it comes up, I like to blab my mouth. I like to be well versed.
Absolutely. Or
at least enough for me to contribute to a good conversation. So I am a security, let's call it specialist, whatever you want to call it, security guard, security agent. Everybody got so many different names. Everyone calls it differently. Different states Perfect. Call it different things. I think security is one of the fields, and before we went online, Manny, you were talking about how it used to be such a joyful job experience and how it was respectful, it was respected. And I feel like security is not looked at in that parameter anymore. You know, when people, if you go to, if like we just had Thanksgiving, if most people are at their family house and when they think of Thanksgiving, they're going to think about mall security. You know, like when it comes to security, you say, oh, security. Oh, what you, a mall cop? You know, yeah. Top flight security of the world or whatever Correct. The case may be. From your guys' experiences, what would you say if you was telling just a nephew or a niece's boyfriend, a guy who has no idea about the security industry? How would you break it down to him? How would you explain it to him from your experience? Y'all, even however y'all want to go, y'all can answer first, however.
Comrade. I went first last time.
I'm getting in my head. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, depending on where they want to actually begin security, I mean, I believe that security has different levels of starting out. You know, mall, working in a mall is actually one of them. You know, so explaining what security is, I mean, security goes beyond what it is. I mean, it goes beyond you just walking around in a mall or you just making sure that a company is secure from anyone from the outside or anyone that's not authorized to be in their premises. You know, it's being aware. It's also making sure that you are always paying attention to what's going on in your surroundings, always studying and seeing if anything that's different or out of the ordinary. I mean, to explain even further that security also takes a lot of studying. I mean, we're talking about in human behavior. I mean, that's one of the major things in studying with security. I mean, in security, we one of our biggest jobs in security is actually paying attention to people and how they act, how they, you know, the way they speak, the way they walk, the way they talk. That's one of the things, that's one of our major assets when it comes to security, is actually being able to read people, being able to know and sort of like have a tuition what's going to happen before it happens, to be able to prevent it from happening if something is going to happen. So I mean, I believe that if anyone was to decide they would like to get into the field, even if it's just a simple security job, you know, in a store, in a mall or so forth, I mean, it takes a lot more than what the word security is. It takes a lot more than what one might assume. Or it even takes more that people just consider it as a paycheck. It takes more than that, you know, because most people, they consider being security, oh, it's the simplest job I can do. It's just a simple paycheck. Yeah, but when things hit the fan, then how are you going to react to it? You know, that's your job. It's for the moment when something does happen, your reaction to it and how fast you react to it. You know, and a lot of people don't seem to understand that. Some people think that is simple, even in the Act 235 situation right now. A lot of people got it. I understand that. And then, you know, it's good for them, and they did the study part. However, it's further than that, too. You have to know how to defend yourself hand to hand. It's not just about your firearm. There's times you're going to have to defend yourself hand to hand. Your firearm is not going to be needed or necessary. And also, you have to be careful with that, too. It's like I always say whenever I'm in a business or if I'm doing Security Act 235. Even though I'm the only one that's armed, that's still one gun too many. It doesn't matter. Anything can always happen. I'm always going to be the target.
Uh-huh.
You know what? So,
I remember talking to somebody once and said, it doesn't matter if the guy had a gun or not coming at you. The moment he fights you, there's a gun in the fight.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I concur with that. I concur with that. And every day that we put on that firearm and we put on that uniform, it's a risk. It's a risk.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm with him all the way. I would define security in one word simply. It's situational awareness. Know what's going on around you. Know what's going on with yourself. If you don't feel like you can do the job, people get like upset if you have to call out one day you're not feeling well. But if you're the first line of defense and you're not 100%,
there's no defense.
That's everybody else.
Correct.
And if they get you when you're not aware and they have your gun, lights out, you're done, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so, I'm just going to throw this out there. I don't know. I guess this is a chat.
Yeah, this is people.
No offense, Sid, but if you're infiltrating a compromised area, security guards aren't what you want. We're there to prevent it from being compromised. Undoing that's more like SWAT, Army, infantry. That's what you want.
I mean, but to be honest, you do have some guys that's security level that probably will be able to be on some of them teams. It's just certain things that might have kept them away from being in that field.
True.
I know some guys like, that
look at me. I'm a veteran, so I have a vague idea of how that would go down. But the goal is to prevent it from being compromised. Once compromised, that's a whole nother skill set that most people in the 235 or security field would never even begin to understand how to handle.
He said that he was saying that you guys look like them. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, you guys look like well, thank you. Oh, that's a compliment. I'll take that.
Thank you. Much obliged.
So, I mean, you know, like I tell people, you know, especially when it comes to security field, I have a weird passion for the security field. I got in this as an alternative to some things I was doing before in life and ended up falling in love with it. So I kind of fell into something that I thought was easy. Because no matter if you win or lose, you know, as long as you don't back down, you're good in my book. You know, I mean, the reality of it is, and most people, like we know, SEALs, Tim Kennedy, people like that, they'll tell you all day long. It's not about winning the fight. It's about showing up to the fight.
Correct.
So,
I mean, you ask any SEAL, it's about whether or not you get back in the fight.
Well, yeah, you know, but that's what they say. The hardest part about the fight is getting into the fight. But, you know, to sum it up, you know, there are a lot of, you know, really good avenues in this field. There are a lot of good jobs in this field. It's just sifting them out and finding yourself in the position to be able to take on these jobs or to be able to be in the right place at the right time, per se, when it comes to this field. Because opportunities come knocking. It's just if you're in the place to be able to take advantage of the opportunity. So, I mean, that's my spiel on the security field as far as, you know, if I was telling someone about it. You know, it's stressful, especially like us. I mean, I do armed security. I don't, and I've worked in some of the worst neighborhoods in the city.
Yes.
I've worked in places What's up, brother?
I was just saying, I heard another voice. I was choking.
Hey guys. I'm sorry I'm late.
It's all good. So, you know, I've worked in some of the probably worst areas in the city by myself. Details by myself. And that kind of brings me back to the premise of, you know, is the security industry or the security field respected or appreciated? Because you think about it, I'm from Philly. I think all y'all are in Philly.
Yes.
So in Philly, it's so bad in the city now. We just reached over 500 murders already for the year, with 30 plus days. In Philadelphia, you have to think about it. It's so bad now that SEPTA had to hire security to help out SEPTA police.
I heard about that.
The climate of the individuals in the city really don't care anymore.
Not at all.
No.
What, and anyone can answer the question, like, you know, like the same way I did before, everyone can just go around answering these questions. But to you guys, what would be, if you was putting together a security team, I'm not talking about skill set, but an initiative. If you was putting together an initiative to help decrease the violent efforts and the stuff that's going on in this city to help Philly PD, how would you structure that conglomerate? And let me know if y'all don't
personally
understand the question.
I would try to start pulling from the local people. Local people that, you know, can have verbal judo, who already know the community. You get random cops from suburbs, nowhere, 3 hours away from Philly. Send him to Kensington. Watch him come back in two pieces.
Yeah, you took the word right out of my mouth. Yeah, word judo is one of the most important skills.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Brian will talk about it. There's a guy at the base that I work at, and you know, he's trying to get back with. A guy named Sergeant Ryan. He was a Philly cop for years. He was stationed in Kensington. Most terrified he's ever been in his life.
And
he was from straight New York. And New York's
this dude was a New York PD cop. NYPD cop.
That's a whole nother different kind of climate.
Correct.
He adapted. He was a great guy, great cop. Just holy crap. But if you get some, like, if you go down the neighborhood, a lot of people think the rough neighborhoods is nothing but shit people, nothing but people who want to be gangsters. And it's not. I grew up in those neighborhoods. There's plenty of great people. It's a family type community.
Yes.
Go around, talk to people, get to know people, I guarantee you get a New York watch set up in like 5 minutes. It wouldn't take long. The people there tend to love their neighbor, tend to love everybody else like family as long as they get along.
I concur. I agree. I mean, one of those most important things is getting people from their own community to be able to help. And understand the community and what's going on and how they can help one another. I mean, going into these communities or into the ghetto, as they say, with your gun held high and going in with a pride is the worst thing you want to do, you know, especially when
right on the gun.
Yeah. You know, especially when as soon as you give somebody with a young mind a gun and they want to go out there gung-ho and just automatically they want to take respect. They want to not earn it. They want to take it. They want to demand it. And that's the worst thing you ever want to do, especially with another individual. I mean, we're people, we're all human. We're all the same. It shouldn't be that you're trying to demand something. You know, if you want respect, you got to earn it. And the way you earn it is by respecting others in the first place. You know, there's many ways of digressing a situation, other than with violence. You know, and that's one of the things the community wants. They want somebody to actually listen and not prejudge before you understand the whole scenario, the whole situation. And that's another problem that's out there. You know, too many prejudge. And I understand sometimes we have to assess a situation rapidly because we don't know what's going on and what's happening. However, it also takes a little bit of initiative to take time to understand and see what's going on around you and see what the situation is.
Exactly.
I actually agree with both of you guys. Definitely getting into the community, but
Some of the police officers that are out here are the same way. They're gunned up. They don't know how to talk to people.
Especially
they don't
the
know how to. Absolutely. The ones that are just coming on, they're just coming out of academy. They're taking even what they learned in academy and it just goes out the door. So even with them, I think that if you did pull people out of the community, you still want to interact with the cops as well. So even on certain situations that you can't handle or they can't handle, the cops will be able to back them up, but back them up in the right way, if that makes any sense to you guys.
No, of course, be having a mediator.
Go ahead, man.
Oh, I'm sorry, Conrad. No, it's like having a mediator. Having a mediator, having a person that's in between between the community and the police. That's understandable.
If I'm not mistaken, a lot of cops in Philly, they just have their own section of Philly. They're constantly there. They never really shift. So if you get those people in between who are, I'll call it a neighborhood watch just for giggles, but if they know the cop, shit, I know people back when I was a kid, they knew the cop's personal phone number. Just call him on his cell phone. He was there in 5 minutes. Didn't have to go through dispatch. Didn't have to go through a checklist of things that are more priority.
A Facebook user, I don't know exactly the name. This thing is not showing me who says it. But one of the Facebook users said, security is an extension of police work that sometimes require being involved in the exact situation as fully commissioned ACT 120 officers. It is the mindset of some officers in society that influence perception of security professionals. Another person also said, we need beat cops on foot walking squad deep. Now, the first statement I read was very profound, very true. I agree. Mindset is how you become great and how you do anything well. You got to have the mindset. To the second statement that we need beat cops walking squad deep in Philly, that means a lot of people. Basically, I would have to. This is my uncle. This is actually a actual. This is actually a police officer.
We got family here. Okay.
Yeah, right. And my uncle, he's been a cop for like 30 years. The man was a cop so good. Now he trains septic cops. Like this is the man. So. I agree. So the beat cop thing, I think that is probably would help deter a lot of stuff. You know, like, so the way it works in Philly, me and Conrad know a million cops. So the way it works in Philly is when cops when they go through the academy, become rookies, they send them all down Kensington. Rookies. Well, I think it should be a 50-50 split. You should have 50% vets. Like guys that's like 5 to 10 years that know how to handle stuff, know how to handle themselves in those kind of places. I also think that if it was up to me, I would not see like when I drive through the city at times. In Kensington, you'll see maybe within a 3 mile radius, you may see about 5, maybe 10. Let's give them the benefit of a doubt. Maybe 10 beat cops, walking cops, if you will. I think that number needs to be times by 10. There should be 2 to 3 cops on every corner. Now, I know Philly cops don't have the resources right now. We're like, if I'm not mistaken, the last time I read the statistics, that we're like almost 3,000 cops short in Philadelphia. And my uncle's on here. I mean, he can probably tell us if I'm right or wrong.
Yeah, they do for a right in the fire.
You know, like... Like,
that's why people in Kensington don't like seeing cops.
Yeah, so that's what it, see the thing is because they know them younger cops got that they still able to run and chase and do all that stuff, right?
That and if you think about what they go through the academy, a lot of people think the police academy is just okay, classroom work, a little bit of physical fit. No, I've seen the Pennsylvania State Police Academy. That is basic training from the Marines. Shit. They're dialed to 120, ready and amped to do something. And I don't really think you want to keep them in that mindset and then throw them in the street. That's why they're so ready to get hands-on, scream in someone's face. They're already dialed to 120. They're not ready to cool off, back off. This is not how you want to handle this situation.
So I believe this is still my uncle saying this. He said, yes, deter and build a relationship with the community to help settle personal conflict between individuals. And believe it or not, that's really 50 to 75% of what cops' job should be. To be, just like how they say deterrent, security, you're a deterrent, if you will. Like, most of the time, like, if you're really good at your job, like I was saying in the beginning, good security is you don't have to be seen. Good security is a deterrent. It will make you feel like you don't need security. Because people may look and be like, well, I was going to mess with him, but I see him. And I already know, if I play with that, then I got to deal with that. And most people ain't trying to play them games.
Absolutely.
You know,
that also depends on, like, where you are. Like, a great example would be, when I was in Kensington, I was a foot patrol security guard. I had to walk up and down the street between two different homeless shelters.
I know exactly where
you
were.
I wore bright gear. I wore a vest. I had a big-ass gun so people knew I was armed. Not to show off, but to show what my job was.
But see, funny thing, let's deal with that. Let me see what all you guys feel about this. Manny said it earlier. When you got a big gun on your leg or on your hip, you become the target.
Correct.
You become the target. Why do y'all think, and we're going to let my man, is it Dan Time?
The time.
All right, my bad, bro. So you answer this first, bro. Like, why do you think that? Because it's been times where I've worked downtown, and instead of driving my car, I caught the train, and I got a big SIG P320 on my leg. Everybody's looking at me like either I'm crazy, and I have, like, regular clothes on. I have, like, regular, you know, like, civilians. They looking at me like either cops. They looking at me like he's either crazy or we want to take this guy down. Right. Why is it that a gun automatically makes you a target?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that you have a weapon. You have something that can cause somebody serious harm. So they're automatically going to be cautious of you. But the reason I did it in Kensington was because I wasn't alone. Every spot I had to check had about two or three guards, but they were all unarmed. And out of all the guards, if somebody has a problem or needs to be approached, I'd rather they approach me, because worst comes to worst, I've got a vest on, I've got a gun, I can get everybody in a building and keep everybody safe. But unarmed guys are more likely to end up getting hurt, seriously injured, God forbid, stabbed or shot.
What you think, Dave?
In a situation where it's a team and I have to be responsible for them, I'd rather be the person they're looking at more so than the unarmed ones.
Dave, you want to answer that?
I would definitely agree. Only thing I would say different is because they would be looking at you like as a cop. Because why would you walk around with a gun that big on you? So they think like, all right, well, even if a police officer is looking at you, it's like, well, it got to be some type of law enforcement, because there's no way you're walking around like that. So some people just don't like cops. Some people don't like law enforcement in general. You're a target no matter how you want to put it. Once you put that vest on and you put that gun on, put that badge on, you're a target.
It's true.
Absolutely, absolutely. I agree. But also, you can deter people from thinking that way, too. I mean, it all takes your personality. It all takes your self-awareness and your demeanor, the way you represent yourself. I mean, sometimes when we put on that uniform, we're not only representing law enforcement, but we're also representing ourselves. I mean, from the moment we decide that we want to work in law enforcement, we're selling ourselves. You know, we're making sure and we're letting them know that your dedication and your investment in me, it's worth it. You know, and that's why, I mean, sometimes people in law enforcement have to take it beyond that. Sometimes it has to come out of your own pocket. Even when you want to learn, take a course in word judo, or if you want to learn how to defend yourself, take a course in judo, take a course in jujitsu. You know, knowing you have to go beyond what you're being paid for or beyond your own training. And you have to do that on your own recognizance. You can't just think that just because you learned from the academy that's it, that's all you need. And that's all the tools you need to function and do your job right. The same in security. you know, yes, you do security. Yes, you end up going for your actual 35 and you end up going for a little training. But your training doesn't stop there. It continues. Because, again, you're selling yourself and you're representing yourself as well as you're representing a major entity in the security and in the law enforcement family. So when you represent that way, when you go, when you start doing your job, especially when you do it well and you speak to the community well and you respect everyone, it gives a little hope for them to see that not everyone or not every law enforcement is a bum or I'm sorry to say, but an ass. You know, it gives a little hope. It gives a little hope for them to depend. You know what? Yes, I, you know what? Not every cop is bad. And yes, we can go to a cop, you know? Okay. And at some point in time, if you're close with the community, they'll be able to point you out, you know, they'll be like, no, you could talk to that cop right there. Don't talk to him. Talk to him, you know, only because you have that rapport and you have that reputation and you have that mutual respect in the aspect where they know that you're doing a job, you're respecting them to a limit, but at the same time, they have to also give you respect. And it's respect you've earned. You know, it's not a respect you're demanding or anything. It's something that you've earned. So, you know, you want to be able to let them know, hey, you know, we're cool. But at the same time, if you do something wrong, hey, you can't take me wrong. You know, I'm going to have to do my job. You know, that right there is a mutual respect. It's a mutual respect, but it makes everyone also feel comfortable because they're like, okay, he's not playing no games. He's cool, but he ain't playing no games neither. Yeah, he's armed and everything, but he doesn't make us feel worried. He doesn't make us feel scared. We don't have to be a fear of it. And that is another situation in itself that has to be addressed. You know, people have to understand that training doesn't only stop at the academy, the same in the military. Training doesn't only stop after PT. Training doesn't only stop after you've already just finished and accomplished your 7 months. No, training continues after that. And it all depends what type of training, whether it's physical or mental training. So, I mean, this is something that is not really spoke of a lot. Everyone wants to talk about more guns or stronger guns or more armor. It's not. It's also psychological. People have to also be able to communicate better. And that's another situation on its own.
Very true.
I love that. People are talking like, I want a bigger gun. I need a bigger bullet. The caliber doesn't matter as long as you hit what you're shooting at.
Absolutely.
But you have to be shooting at something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. I mean, I've had a person that was a veteran, and I'm sorry, and I'll leave with this. I'll stop with this. I mean, there was once a guy in the Act 235 field that used to throw in my face all the time. Oh, I got 30 years and all this. But when stuff hit the fan, he was the first one that didn't know what to do. Not only that, right, but the people were shooting right behind him exactly, and he didn't know where it was coming from, and he didn't know what a gunshot sounded like. And I wasn't even in the premises at the time. I just heard the first pop, and I already ran towards because I already knew. So there's people that may claim they have years of experience and so forth, but never been in any type of danger or never been in any type of situation. You know, they've been in the most safest situation of all. So they've never been in a situation like being in Kensington and Allegheny or I in Tioga when they had the clubs over there. I mean, I worked in those clubs too. I in Tioga was one of the hottest spots because you got people coming from not only people from Philly, but you got Trenton, you got Camden, you got, I mean, people from Newark. You got all the hottest cities coming down to that spot. You know, and it was every weekend. I mean, there was no weekend that you did not have that spot hot.
I think also, but that especially in the security field, a lot of, I'm not gonna say everybody, but a lot of 235 guards think after they take their 235 class, that's it. I know everything I need to know. And that becomes a problem when people that our 235 know that they have to further their education, they have to further their training. It makes them look bad, and that becomes an issue. And that's why the outside people are looking at us 235 agents and us that are doing security like we're a joke. So I think definitely when it comes down to it. Further education, further training in this field is a must. If not, then you put yourself in danger.
And a user not too long ago, I don't mean to cut you guys off, a user not too long ago was talking about how security guards and police are one of the same. Yes, they can be considered one of the same. However, the what separates them again is the authority and the amount of training that they take, or the amount of training that they initiate for themselves. Because again, being a cop, you're working for the city, so you're a civil servant, so you're working in a higher authority than an Act 235. Act 235, we're considered security guards, but we have some authority, but not entirely, especially when it comes to arrests. Some would say that Act 235 arrests are more like a citizen's arrest. Others will disagree with me and say Act 235 arrests will be no different than a Philadelphia police officer, and it's not. It's different.
By law, we only have the right to detain a person.
Do that if it's a felony.
Yeah, if you with an Act 235, you lock somebody up, you're going to get arrested too. You have the power to
detain in the event of a felony.
To detain.
And you have no authority to enforce the law.
We have no arresting power.
Exactly.
Which is weird, but I get some things why they do things some ways. But
exactly. we're not deputized with the authority to enforce the law. That's
exactly.
You can be. I don't know the process, but you can be. So
let me ask you guys this question. Since the pandemic, where do you see the softest targets? And when I say that, I mean places that's not prepared. If someone was going to go in and rob it, if someone was going to set it up, where have you noticed like places that are so laxed where they should be heightened? Where do you think you notice the softest targets at nowadays?
I mean, after the pandemic, I'd have to say the small businesses in the local neighborhood. I mean, look at Kensington. It basically burned down.
Very true. How about you, Manny?
I don't want to comment on the Black Lives Matter movement at all, but during the protests...
No, go ahead. You can talk here. Go ahead.
All of them burned down. And that's local businesses. That's local people. That's everybody's livelihood.
That's neighborhood resources.
Right.
And that's one of the things to add to that. That's one of the things I didn't understand and I didn't agree with. I mean, this is your own community. This is your own neighborhood. This is your own people, your own families. You know, you didn't only affect these businesses. You also affected your own livelihood, because it made it more difficult for people to shop around town. It made it more difficult for people to find food around the neighborhoods. People had to go far. From what I've heard, people had to go to other cities or even two townships away for them to get food. Other people went to Jersey to get food because of everything that happened and how everything was turned out. That was one of the saddest moments that I believe happened in that whole situation.
Absolutely. But that's definitely, it was small businesses, not really too much of these big like jewelry stores or anything like that, because they were prepared for it. They was ready for it. Rather, it was going to happen today, tomorrow, next week, they were ready for it. Small businesses, I don't want to say they didn't have the resources to make sure, but they ain't had the resources.
They didn't. Small businesses and local neighborhoods, they make enough to support themselves, maybe support the area a little bit, but I don't know how much it costs to hire a security company to put a guard there, but it can't be cheap. Not with the insurance and the liability. I mean, if the guard's armed, oh, shit.
And I mean, that's the other thing. Small businesses didn't have the resources big businesses have. I mean, small businesses, I mean, a lot of them are mom and pop stores, of course, and they depend on what they make. A lot of them are no different than people that work paycheck to paycheck. You know, some of them don't even have to pay at the end of the week once they're paying all their employees, and if they have employees. Like bodegas. Bodegas, it's mainly their families. Mainly the families will run, so there's not like there's employees to pay. However, by the time they finish paying for the products and everything they're purchasing, plus their taxes, plus the light bill, plus the water bill, plus, I mean, it's amazing if they have anything to even go by.
Yeah,
you know, and then when the situation happened, when, you know, unfortunate happened, a lot of them lost. I mean, they lost hundreds of dollars with no relief, no help, especially from the government.
Even the insurance companies couldn't keep up.
Yeah.
Not at all. Not at all. Not at all.
For so many of those business owners, and everybody's like, well, they bought all that product. Can't they eat that? No, that's not how that works.
Correct.
You can't buy product, you're putting in a store and eat it yourself. It doesn't work that way.
Very true. So with all that happening, and with, I feel like me personally, when it comes to that space, as far as like creating a secure infrastructure, I feel like, you know, especially like with the pandemic and things like that, I still think we're still in the beginning.
Oh, no doubt. They've already got a new variety of coronavirus coming out.
Exactly. And it's, you know, like a new, it's going to keep mutating. And I don't think we've seen the worst, like the coronavirus, but these other variants. Now, once the T-Rex of these variants come out, oh, it's going to get bad. But so as far as like infrastructure and things like that, and because the government is not going to help nobody no more. I just don't think we can do it.
They called it an infrastructure bill. I doubt we'll see any of it.
Yeah, it ain't happening.
No, absolutely.
When is Philadelphia finished its road construction? I haven't seen it.
Exactly. So one of the things, and like we've all worked in some form of religious institution, some sort, like I said, some form of corporate America and things like that. So what was you guys' experience with religious institutions as far as doing security and the way that they appreciated or respected you for the job that you were doing?
For me, it was probably the best post I've ever worked. I've only worked the one synagogue, but I also had the pleasure of doing a Jewish community center where they did just about every single one of their celebrations and holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never felt more appreciated in that field at all. I mean, when I did the synagogue, when they were doing Hanukkah or somebody's birthday, they'd come up to me and be like, hey, did you eat yet? And then they bring me a big-ass plate of food. I'd be looking at them like, guy, that's not what I'm here for. I'm supposed to make sure you're alive. And as much as I loved it, I felt horrible accepting it because my job, like I said, it's situational awareness. I've got an entrance here. I've got a weak point here. I got to keep an eye on that, not stare at this delicious food that you've now distracted me with. They're great people. I don't care. I was born, raised Catholic. I don't even know what you call me now. I don't even go to church. Believe? Faith? Go to church? Forget about it. Catholic churches is probably the only place I'm not a big fan of. But when it comes to keeping them safe, I've never felt more welcome.
I can concur with that. I've done synagogue. I've also done a mosque, Muslim mosque, and I've done a lot of gospel and Baptist church, Christian churches. I mean, I've when it comes to the religion aspect, or when it comes to any of those religious icons, I should say, you're always welcome with open arms. I always feel that welcoming love and attention and the respect that they give, as well as they feel safe, especially when you converse with them, when you make them feel safe, you know, just by them knowing you instead of alienating them and you associate with them, they feel more comfortable. They know that you're there for them. They know that you're there to secure them, you know, and that's one of the things, even if they invite you. I mean, one of the biggest issues I have because of my culture, I'm European Spaniard. So in our culture, when someone offers you a drink, you cannot deny it. You have to accept it. And it's because not only are they offering you a drink, but they're offering you a friendship. They're offering you a hand, you know, and by you denying it is as if you're saying, well, I don't want nothing from you, or you're denying a friendship. And in our culture, we don't want to do that. We always, we enjoy new friendship. We enjoy meeting new people. We enjoy, you know, the company is it's the most important part of it. It's the company. So when you're working in religious temples like that, it's one of the key points to it that when they offer you, it's always a beautiful thing to accept. Yes, if we're working, it's kind of hard to accept because we're working. You know, it's no different than when working at a club or a bar or something like that. You know how you get people to come up to you and they're like, hey, you want a drink and everything? No, I can't, my friend. You know, I'm sorry. I'm armed and I'm working at the moment. I can't do it. You know, and you take that responsibility. Yeah.
There's a trick to it at a bar. If you know the bartender and someone's trying to buy you a drink, but you want to keep the good vibes going, you get the bartender to pour you some water.
Absolutely. But I always said myself, you know, I always tell the customer, I'm like, no, a water, Red Bull, anything like that is fine. You know, that's actually a way to also keep that relationship. And you'll see that people feel more comfortable and they feel you as normal as they are. They don't see you as a separate entity. They don't see you as a separate person from them. They see that you're no different than they are. And that's what they like the most and what makes them feel comfortable the most.
Yeah, I think the greatest goal in this field of work, even more so than being a police officer, is you're trying to prove that you're part of their community. You're there to make their community better. Not to make them feel like you're the reason they're the reason you're there, because you're not. You're there to make sure everybody has a great day, has what they need, and goes home to their family.
Absolutely.
So let me ask go ahead, D. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I'm actually in that right now. Actually, that's where I'm coming from. So I do several churches and also synagogues. I agree with you guys. They're probably the best people to work for. They're the easiest to work for. And they appreciate you. They appreciate the fact that they can come somewhere and worship God or whoever they're believing in at that time and feel safe to be able to go home and still be with their family, have a love for that. Because a lot of these jobs, we're just a body. To them, we are, it works out both ways.
You put it nicer than me. Most places I worked before the synagogue, I was at each other.
But to add to that, you know what else too? We don't judge them. And that's another important aspect. We don't judge them and they love that. When they see that a person is not judging and it's not offending their belief, it's not intruding their belief, they respect you more for that.
Very true.
My experience with the synagogue, I'm not Jewish, knew nothing about Judaism, but I would listen in. I mean, I got nothing better to do. I'd listen in while I keep an eye out. And the stories were cool. Like, every now and again, I'm like, that's weird. I don't understand that. And the rabbi would just sit there at the end of the friggin', I don't know what they call it.
The service.
Sabbath. Or no.
Service.
They say service.
Oh, service. They are services.
He would just sit there and explain the story to me, and we'd shoot back and forth between what each other knew between our faiths. It was never malice.
Yeah.
Cool conversation that you really don't get to have outside of a synagogue.
Correct.
On top of that,
I think
some of the people I've met, like when I did the Jewish Community Center, I had the privilege to meet two World War II vets. Probably some of the coolest people I will ever brag about meeting, mind you. Because you're never going to find people more badass in the world after that.
Right.
So let me ask y'all this. Out of y'all experience with like, say, getting jobs or doing details, how do you guys decide what to charge? Or do you just accept? Or do you just accept what they say they're paying?
I mean, in my experience, they don't even give you an option. But like when I was working with the company in Kensington, I was supposedly a supervisor. And then I looked at my paycheck and found out I'm not a supervisor. I looked at my paycheck and went, no, I'm not a supervisor.
This is not supervisor.
Something about this ain't saying supervisor.
But
How about you?
Me, even though I was getting paid lower than your standard arm guard, I was finding out. And I kid you not, like 2 days before I had been assigned to that post, there was an active shooter. Somebody got killed right in front of the supervisor of the area.
Oh, wow.
And they're all throwing a fit at the unarmed guards, and I'm looking at everybody going, what did you want him to do? The dude was already shot. The shooter was running away. What'd you want him to do? Do you pay him enough to jump in front of that bullet? You don't pay me enough to jump in front of that bullet.
I knew that's right.
It would depend on the area. Like the Jewish community centers, they're soft, high-profile targets that are very unlikely to have an attack. But when they do, it's usually, holy shit. Excuse my language. But
no.
It's either an IED or somebody with an AR and 3 30-round magazines, hollow point rounds. So I would say you get paid more, but I can't really judge it because, like, you've worked at the Horsham Air Base. We do nothing. No, I kid you not. I've never been more bored in my life. But we make 18 an hour. Synagogues, I feel like you should, or synagogue, especially mosques. Just the way people view the Muslim religion is disgusting. I went to Afghanistan. I don't view them any differently. But the way that I've seen some people treat Muslims, it's just disgusting. So, like I would say synagogues, it's got to be over 20 an hour. Mosques, 30. If it's a Catholic church, I think everybody's already armed. I don't think you have to worry about it. Especially in Texas.
How about you, D?
The Catholic Church in Texas. See what happens. I bet you the priest shoots you.
I guess it all comes down to the location of it. Let's say if I was dealing with a church that was in like a rural area where not too much is going to happen at. Like, it's not going to really... I wouldn't charge them $50, $60 to be there for that. Now, you put me in Kensington. And you want me at this church and you want to make sure you're all right? Then, yeah, because now my life is really, really at danger. So
yeah.
It depends on location. It depends on the church. Like, why are you hiring security? I want to know the background of why you want security in your building. Mm-hmm. Have you had threats? Have people already ran in here and tried to assassinate the bishop or assassinate somebody that's in your congregation?
You might start another crusade.
Right. So it's going to be based off of variables. Church I got right now is it's an all-inclusive church, so you have transgenders in there, you got gays in there, you have all of that in that one service. So it's like some people bash these people, and because of what they
believe, especially
in
a religious background,
right? And so you never know what's going to go on. So I understand why they need security.
Yeah,
so when
yeah.
that comes down, you know what you're getting yourself into.
You price accordingly because you know that is a higher possibility of you actually receiving some form of contact or getting into some action.
Absolutely.
It also depends on like what you would need for the site. Like he said, Kensington. I have a vest. If it's a church, especially an all-inclusive church, no offense to them, I've got an AR. I'm sending a message that go, leave these people alone. I will end you.
Yeah, don't even try it. Alone. Right.
But
let them worship.
I did in a synagogue on Bustleton Avenue. I was in a suit, tie. I looked proper. I concealed carry. Nobody even knew I was a guard.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's
I didn't want to upset kids. I didn't want to worry the family because it wasn't a bad area. They still wanted to be safe. So I made it so I looked like I was there for service versus personal protection.
Vest, AR. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, that's how I was in the mosque. In the mosque, I was that way as well, dressed in a suit and tie, concealed. They didn't want none of the families to be afraid. They didn't want anyone to be afraid. They wanted everything to seem as normal as possible because, I mean, you have families going in there with their children. you know, because of the situation with the Muslims and everyone and the way people are misjudging and misleading Muslims, people are afraid. So you got children going in there. You don't want them to be scared of, oh, okay, why is this guy with a gun here? Is there something wrong, mom, you know, or dad? Right. You know, we don't want them to be afraid. But then again, I'll give you a prime example. There was once a church in Ion, Tioga, exactly where the clubs and everything, that situation is. That's one of the hottest churches that you would have to pay or charge a certain amount. And it's a big church. It's a big church because it took most of what used to be a supermarket there. So it took most of that spot, that area. So, yeah, that's a dangerous spot. That's a dangerous position you want to be in.
Religion is such a touchy subject for a lot of younger generations and people. They view it with such malice that...
Yes, yes.
God forbid when they get drunk.
See, when you deal with religious organizations, you're not only dealing with mental individuals, you're dealing with psychological problems too.
Yep,
and absolutely. You're dealing with a place where people come to escape the harsh realities that they deal with throughout the day of their lives, and they feel like that's their only safe place at times. You know, believe it or not, I mean...
Cut you off real quick.
Go ahead.
It was when I was still living in Jersey, sadly. Right up the street, there used to be like three strip clubs. Three. Like right next to each other. Can't make this up. And one day I drove down 73 and I saw two buildings gone. Down to the foundation, gone. And I went, all right, weird. I drove around the corner one day. I found a Christian church the size of a Kmart. Like a super Kmart from when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Huge. And I went, oh, okay. They were literally in the same lot. And I went, wow, yeah, my church wasn't there before, but I'm pretty sure that strip club was going on like a day.
So,
I think they used the same demolition ball.
So this is something I want you guys and like the viewers to take account of. So in the last 20 years, there has been 19 mass shootings in religious organizations. So it's been one. We're not talking about somebody getting shot in the parking lot. We're talking about full on Call of Duty, clear the area type stuff going on at a religious institution. Christians.
And that's just what we know of, though.
Yeah, this is what we know of, right?
And that's not including the arsons during COVID.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
Remember in November, actually, of 2017, the 26 people that got killed in the church in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? I feel like, and just think about maybe about a month ago, an old pastor in Tennessee had to tackle a guy with a gun that got up in the church, whatever the case is.
Put on that pastor. That man was quick.
Yeah, that old man wasn't playing. He was on it. He was fleet to foot.
He had to be Catholic. Man knew how to handle
himself. So
protecting his flock. His flock.
That's what he was doing. And but you know the crazy thing, you won't see that often. That was very.
He was in a very good position to do.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
That was a one in a
million. A one in a lifetime situation, right? So you know, I believe this is how I would rank it, right? Me personally, churches. When I say churches, I mean like Christianity organizations. They are not as adept, but they're coming around to getting good security, and being willing to pay for it, right? I've worked synagogues and I've worked churches. Synagogues, top dollar. But see, the synagogues I worked at, you had guys pulling up in Rolls Royce Dons, and Bentley, you know, GTs and stuff like that. Like the regular car, the synagogue I worked at, the regular car was a Mercedes Benz. It wasn't no hoopties in the parking lot. So this synagogue, I was lucky. Like this place, I got paid husky just for 2 days. But anyway, synagogues, they don't play. They've been more in that. But see, we got to think about it. That big synagogue shooting maybe about 4 years ago, where I forget the proper numbers, but I think it was about maybe 13 or maybe like 15 people got killed in the synagogue when that guy went 15. In there. during the mass shooting. Remember, because it was the one in the church, it was a synagogue, and then it was the one in the mosque when the dude videotaped it himself while he was going through. Looked like Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but I thought we were in a day and age in America where
you would think, you know, people,
God, Jesus, whoever, you I would, don't care.
But you would think business. You would think people have the freedom to whatever, right? So this is a question.
I just don't understand how people can level to hate to such a degree that you're just going to drive to a place you can't stand to shoot people because
it's
reason.
Simple. I mean, everyone has their ability to believe, and what you believe might conflict with what someone else believes. You may believe it's not cool to beat women, and you stand by that. But Jimmy Neutron over here may think that that's his lifestyle. And since you have an issue with my lifestyle, we have a conflict between each other. That's how most conflicts happen. True. You know, and then a whole bunch of, you know, that, or whatever the case may be. So I want to.
I just think there's a difference between it happening in front of me and me wanting to have something to say about it. Like, if I'm on the subway train and some dude is just going ham on his girl, I'm going to say something. Now, if in the midst of me trying to stop this, she goes, no, it's okay, and she wants him to continue,
there's nothing you can do at that point.
It ain't my business no more. She's fine with it.
There's nothing you can do, right?
My mom,
I'm good. But I'm not going to go looking for that.
So let me ask y'all this.
Doing. They go looking for the place to go do this. I don't get it.
It is what it is, right?
Yeah, they plan for that stuff.
Like, something's got to be wrong up here for people to just jump to, you know what, I'm going to get in a car and go shoot up a mosque. Well, they did 9-11. No, they didn't. Crazy people did 9-11. You're doing what the big crazy people that did in 9-11 did.
So let me ask y'all this. If, just hypothetically speaking, if we fired all the police officers in Philadelphia,
I was wondering when you were going to ask this. So I've been staring at it for like 10 minutes.
And I want all y'all to answer this yourselves, right?
None of my family live in Philly, so yeah.
Listen, if we fired, if the city announced tomorrow that starting Friday, there will be no more such thing as a police officer, would you and the people you know in your immediate circle be able to protect themselves and their families without the assistance of a cop?
Well, most of my family doesn't live in Philly, so yeah. Most of my family lives in Jersey, where you can't own guns anyway. So, but I think the city as a whole would probably go to the crapper for probably a week before everybody went, wait a minute, I can either leave or shoot back. And then it's going to go further into the crapper because there's going to be a huge body count. Up until it evens out and stupid people start realizing, oh shit, I'm going to get shot if I break into this house.
I agree in a sense, you know, I would have to defend arm with arm, you know what I mean? If you have the arms, if you have the means, defend your family how you must. If the next step is to move away or move somewhere else, then that's another choice as well. Just because you're defending for the moment doesn't mean that it's you're going to be able to continue, or doesn't mean that you don't have to rest, or doesn't mean that there's going to come a time where it's going to be overwhelming. And that's the other aspect of it. If there is no law enforcement, if there is no police officers at all, there's no buffer. There's no longer anyone in between you and all those that are wanting to do harm to you and your family. So it's just you. You and that door that's standing before anybody that's trying to get in. You know, that's about the only defense that you're gonna have after that. So any means necessary to protect your family, to protect yourself, is what everyone is gonna be on everybody's mind. And that's gonna be the first thing on everybody's mind. However, you're also gonna be dealing with the masses. It's not going to just be one person. It's not going to just be two. It's not going to be three. It's not going to be four. We're talking about a plethora of people. A plethora of people that think alike, that have the same criminal mentality, that have the same malicious mentality, that are going to be coming after you. And it's not because of your personality or because of you specifically, because you did something to them. No, it's just because they can, because there's nothing to stop them, no one to tell them otherwise. And that's one of the biggest issues that happened with the rioting and the looting. Mm-hmm. You know, you had the masses. It's not just one. It wasn't just two. No, we're talking about a plethora. We're talking about a bundle of people that came all at once. I mean, I don't know if you guys even seen in the news where recently, it just happened recently, someone sent out a mass text in California or San Diego, if I'm not mistaken.
What do you call it? Like the sudden rob groups, they just storm a store.
Listen, they like sent out a mass text.
To Walmart and just mass rob it.
It was a mass text where it was actually staged. It was, everyone was ready to go, and they broke into, I think, Gucci stores and so forth, and mm-hmm. robbed the place clean in broad daylight.
That. I didn't know it initiated from a text message. Yeah,
broad daylight. They didn't care. Broad daylight.
Everybody was just.
Exactly.
It's wrong.
Just another day.
If you're a regular Joe Schmo civilian, you don't know how to handle that. Back away. Leave it alone. Yes. You have no way of. It's like when. Touchy subject, but just an example. Take the Kyle Rittenhouse situation, for example. None of them knew how to handle somebody shooting a gun and actually killing somebody. Charged him anyway. Bad idea. You're probably going to get shot. Another person got shot. Same thing could happen to you. You don't know what they have. You don't know their mentality. And you are in no position to mediate this. Let it happen. Remember what happened. Describe it later. Save yourself the potential hospital visit or six-man carry that you're going to have going down the hole.
Yeah, I think I will only, the only thing I will add to that is absolutely would I be able to defend, I will be able to defend it to a certain extent. Because when I go out to work, who's here to watch my family?
Absolutely.
So it goes both ways. So even if I teach my wife how to shoot, which she does, what will happen if four or five men come in? She's only going to be able to get off two shots to these men. So she might hit two of them. But what about the other one that's coming behind her? So it if no police is there.
I mean, the best thing you can hope for at that point is that they run off after the first two shots.
They're high. What is their help? Where is her help?
All right, so.
The only part I want.
That's actually
well, I
want
to add one more thing, and I'm sorry to interrupt. I want to add one more thing to that. You know, those two shots, even though she would let out two shots, I believe she would let out a little bit more than two shots, only for one reason. And that one reason is if you train her properly and you train yourself properly, that doorway, remember, that doorway can only fit one or two people at a time. That is your last line of defense. You have to defend that doorway to the end. That doorway is going to prevent multiple people from coming in at one time, especially if you only have one doorway. If you have two, then that's an issue. That's when you have the front door and you have a back door. Yeah, that's going to be more of an issue. But the other thing is the worry of how long will it take for you to even get to her or to get to your family, too, when you're at work, like you said. You know, that's also something that goes in our minds. You know, we worry about that. We think about that.
Somebody up here just said what I was thinking. Like, fire the cops or don't fire the cops. What you come to in the core of this issue is a good, like my whole family, my mother's side, hates guns, can't stand guns. Believes that the whole purpose of the police force and government is there to protect you. And I'm sitting here going, no, the government was here to secure your rights. Nothing more, and protect the sovereignty of this country. Not you personally. That's not what their job is. The police officer's job, it was even acknowledged in a Supreme Court decision, is not always to protect the civilian.
I want to know from the Facebook.
Your safety at the end of the day comes down to you.
Uh-huh.
End of story. Because if someone plows through that door, cops still ain't going to be there for 10, 15, sometimes correct. Even an hour.
Because I have multiple.
So no matter what you do, how you do it, like guns, don't like guns, it doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, you can give the responsibility to someone else and be disappointed and hurt or dead, or you can hold on to that responsibility that is yours, given by God or whoever you worship, to protect yourself and your loved ones. There's nothing wrong with cops.
It's a very good point.
But first of all, they're undertrained, they're underfunded, and dialed 211 every day, all day. Like, cops that get sent to Kensington, I guarantee you, their briefing in that morning is, keep your head on a swivel, you're going to get shot. What do you think they're going to do? If you tell me the moment I walk out my front door, I'm probably going to get shot. Yeah, I'm going to be a little itchy with the gun. What do you want?
So,
if all I'm going to think is, I'm going to go in a hole today if I don't pull this trigger first.
So here's my premise on it, right? You know, we've been talking about training because we know in this field, training is a big deal. I would urge you guys to see this, and this is what I do in my house, right? So in my house, you know, I go through scenarios with my wife simply because, like my man D said, what if I'm not home? So you have to think, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is how I'll be sitting in the house watching Netflix if I get the chance to do that. And then mentally, I even have done, I think about where I place guns at.
Correct.
That's me, right? Because I'm like, why put them all in a safe? Because they're not going to do nobody no good if they all in the safe and they don't have enough time to go put no code in or unlock no lock, right?
If I'm home, you're going to be like, you're going to be like Kevin Hart. Military
rules. So listen,
you're
right?
You're going to be like Kevin Hart then.
So
I was thinking, no lie, I was thinking that the other day.
So, so listen, right? So, I mean, and this is something I want you. This is something I want y'all to really think about. So, say if Manny, say if you at work on a detail for 2 days, same for all of you. Have you set your family up that if someone breaks in, no matter where they break in at, that they have a plan in order to win the fight. Absolutely. So with my wife, I have a plan in order. Listen,
single with no kids. No.
I mean, with kids and no kids. So that's what I'm saying. Everyone's situation is a little different because everyone's family dynamic is different. So you have to be able to tell your wife, listen, I tell my wife, don't grab none of these handguns. Grab them AKs or them ARs. Because I need what they hear to be the determining factor if they're going to stay in there. They might be a little inclined to stay in there and they hit that 9mm, but if they hear that 7.62 by 39, they're going to get the hell out of Dodge.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I would say
the one time caliber matters when you want the bang to be louder just to scare the. But you have to be careful with that, though, because if you have a reach for the AK, remember, you even said it at Horsham, 9mm stops people. 7.62 by 39 puts holes through people, the wall, the fridge, your neighbor's wall.
And somebody else.
you got to remember,
so
you got to teach them which bullet to use, because
so
I used to have a 44 Magnum. I'm not using that for a home invader. Well, I'll shoot my neighbor by accident and go to jail.
Well, listen, my personal rifle, I got green tips in it. But the other ones or whatever, I have hollow tip rifle rounds in there for that simple fact of the matter, right?
I'm just saying, what if she reaches for the green tips?
Hey, somebody shouldn't have came in there.
I'm not denying that. I'm just saying.
But no, like I want y'all all to really take
like
that.
Two houses down, she's gonna feel pretty bad.
Yeah, it'd be all right. I want y'all to take that into consideration, though, because the reality of it is it might come a day where it's you and yours against the world. And it what might, if you absolutely. Have to go out to figure out a way to get a meal for the house? Then she might have to be able to, you know, feed the baby some oatmeal and keep a gun nearby just in case.
Right. Nothing wrong with that.
So
the only thing I would add to that is, like, the moment I moved to Philadelphia, I applied for my CZW. I got everything, whole nine yards. But I also got concealed carry insurance.
Yeah.
Right.
We might want that.
Oh, you USCCA, better get that.
USCCA? See,
we have that. USCCA.
I have it.
I read it. You're not. It's illegal in Jersey. A little stupid, but.
I have it, yeah.
Everything. You know, that's why I told you. Everything is illegal in Jersey. Everything is illegal in Jersey. If you blow your nose too hard, you're going to jail in Jersey.
Don't get me started. So my brother was like, you want to go shooting this weekend? And I'm like, where are you going? Atlantic City? None of my guns are Jersey legal, dude.
So
where am I going to shoot?
So two questions. One going to be a fun one, and one is going to be a more serious one. But we're going to answer the serious question first.
Well, real quick then, let me throw this out there.
All right.
On top of all of this and the plan with your family, one big thing you have to have them know is what they can do.
No, absolutely.
Given a situation. Like, take Joe Biden, for example. The amount of misinformation you throw out with one sentence. I just give my wife the shotgun and tell her to let a shot go loose on the balcony on the second floor. I'm like, no! No! That's illegal! Why would you do that?
Because he don't know no better.
Every gun owner in America is like, Joe, that's illegal.
But see, Joe won't go to jail for that. We will, though.
He won't go to jail for that, but now exactly. People are thinking, maybe if I let off a warning shot, not knowing warning shots are a federal crime, and if you do it with a shotgun, God only knows what you're going to hit.
All right. So
make sure they don't believe the misinformation. Big one.
So
warning shots are a no-no. Make sure they know. If it's like, for instance, if they're unarmed, but it's still a violent entry, Pennsylvania has a castle doctrine. You can shoot back. Most people don't know that. Most people are like, well, they're unarmed. I can't do anything. Bullshit. They're breaking into your house. You don't know what they're going to do. Shoot.
Listen. I got so many guns around my house that, listen, you come in here, you getting shot. And so I'm going to say you grabbed one of these guns that was over in this cabinet or whatever. But anyway.
If I ever visit your house and I see little black boxes attached to your end tables, I know exactly what I'm looking for.
Well, trust me, you'll get the code word, this is, go do that.
I swear to God, if someone breaks into your house and you pull Kevin Hart, I better get a video.
What is a Kevin Hart? What do y'all keep talking, what's that? What is that y'all talking about?
It's one of his stand-ups. Somebody broke into his house in California. He bought like 50 guns. I don't know how he pulled that off in California. And he stashed them all over his house. And he makes up all these stupid scenarios. Oh, you're going to break into my room while I'm sitting here masturbating? Just let me read for the magazine one more time.
Hold on. Is that from the stand-up when he did it at his house? Yep. All right. Yeah, I remember.
Look it up on Netflix. Kevin Hart's the shit. I don't care who says what.
All right. So out of all you guys, or whatever the case may be, where do you guys see your security career going within the next 3 years, if you're going to stay in the field?
Well, I'm hired by TSA, so I'm going somewhere federal, one way or the other.
You're a federal employee now. Congrats on that.
Congrats.
Congratulations. God bless.
What about you, D?
Freaking pay cut.
I'm just I just want to help people. So my whole thing is take it a little national, global. See who I can help. See who I can't help. I mean, make money on the way. It is what it is.
Just be careful. Don't go to the Middle East or Africa right now. It's not.
Oh bad. Yeah, no.
How about you, Manny?
Russia and China might not like you either. Just saying.
If God permits it, man, if blessing, I'd like to continue the same, like Dee said, you know, continue helping the best that I can. And if my God, you know, again, like I said, if God permits it, my health permits it for as long as I can, you know, and if I can prosper and you know, land a federal job, here we go. that'll be a blessing as well.
Listen, now is the time to put applications in everywhere.
Oh, yes.
Everywhere. Listen, throw it all the poop you can to the wall. Something's going to stick.
Absolutely.
Hey, I only got lucky. I know a guy in the TSA.
So if I had to answer the question, I love doing physical security. I have probably the sweetest job, and it pays buku. But I am actually getting ready to sign up for a cybersecurity course for Penn to get my certification in cybersecurity. I do believe you got to be able to keep up with the times, and security is going to probably be 90% cyber and 10% physical. in the future.
Cyber and 10% physical. It's just that you see more of the physical because we live in a huge,
very dangerous city. So that's my plan to be in cybersecurity probably within the next 3 years, maybe five, three, depending on how fast I move with it. And yeah, so that's what's up. Everybody's going to, so basically no one is getting out of the field. Everyone is like, this is what I'm doing. This is how I'm rocking. Last question before I let you fellas go. What's the next gun y'all buying?
Can I sell my guns on here?
Oh, yeah, this is free. Ain't nobody monetize. Ain't nobody, you know. Is that a SIG?
SIG P320 AXG.
Nice.
All right, I'm mad at him right now. All right.
I sold the gun to get it.
I'm mad at him right now. I'm the SIG boy. He know I'm a SIG guy.
I still don't have a long gun. What do you want? I'm not the one who bought an AK pistol.
What about you, Dick?
I'm not 100% sure. I want some type of pocket size, book bag size, 5.56. So I'm looking. I'm searching.
So you want like a small AK pistol?
Did you ever see those?
I mean AR. Like a small AR pistol. Like
that's the one I want. I want one, but I want something very nice. I want it built. So when okay. I pull that thing out, it's time.
How about you, Manny?
My ambition, though, is very expensive.
I know where he's going. I already heard Beretta. You want a Wilson Combat, don't you?
No, actually, I was more looking at the 50 cal.
Desert Eagle?
For what?
No. 50 cal rifle.
Oh, a barrel?
Yes. Woo-hoo. Like I said, it's an ambition.
Listen, man, you can get... everything is obtainable. I'm going to just let you know that now.
Long range, everything is obtainable.
I would say, because I'm already probably going to be buying me a compact 320 for a carry gun. I have a full size. I need a compact. And I'm probably going to get the Spectre.
Okay.
Have y'all seen the Spectre yet?
I did.
P320 Spectre. I'm probably going to get the Spectre, but that's going to be my everyday carry with probably a Delta Point Pro on it or maybe an RMR, one or the other. Also, I am looking into getting a Ruger Precision Rifle.
Rugers are good. Rifles.
I'm going to get a Caliber and maybe 6.5 Creedmoor or 308.
Nice.
Yeah, something I can reach out and touch something.
308's a little better.
Yeah, you know. What I'm really probably going to do,
I'm
just going to figure out which bullet is cheaper, to be honest. And that's the caliber I'm going to go with. I'm going to figure out which bullet is more affordable because that's like a dollar a round.
Yeah.
But I'm not just going to be shooting that for giggles. I'm reaching out to touch
depending
something.
Depending on what you're shopping for, 9 mils a dollar a round right now.
Yeah, true.
That's the problem.
True indeed. So, listen, man, I want to appreciate you guys.
$3 is a Sig Hollow Points. It cost me $60.
Stop complaining. I got plenty of those. Stop complaining.
I'm complaining because I only got 60 of them.
Stop complaining, man. You know, this is an expensive hobby. Expensive habit.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying it didn't used to be this expensive.
Well, you're right. So,
but, there is one thing we didn't cover, though.
What?
Medical marijuana security.
We didn't cover that. I know I've done it. Conrad done it. Have y'all done it?
I've done it at Keystone down South Philly.
Keystone. Okay. I did it in True Leaf in King of Prussia.
I've done it at Beyond Hello in Bristol and in downtown Philadelphia.
Okay.
In my opinion,
King of Prussia, the way they have it set up, they want me to sit in my car and stare at the parking lot all day. And
right.
Brian, you know me. That drives me fucking crazy.
Yeah, he's going to go crazy.
So I get out of my car and I walk around and my boss is like, don't go in the store. They get uncomfortable with the guns.
Like, listen, let me tell you, right?
I need to be able to go in the store. They need to know I can get in there.
When I work for Beyond...
Because I walks in Keystone like it ain't nothing. They're like, hey, you want something to something to drink? You want something to eat? So it all depends on what.
That's how they are with me and King of Prussia. They love me.
Well, let me tell you.
I kid you not. One of the I thought of this when you talked about what gum we're going to buy next. One of the managers at the True Leaf and King of Prussia has a mill machine, and he builds his own ARs. He showed me a picture of three of them. One of them had a friggin' bayonet attached to it. And I'm just sitting there on the corner going, he has a bayonet on his gun.
So another funny question. What caliber do you think is better? AR-15 or AK-47, 7.62x39?
Okay, you're talking about 223, 556?
5.56 or 223
AR
Wild.
223, 5.56, 6.5 Creedmoor.
I just said two calibers. Come on, man. I said two calibers. 7.62x39 or 5.56?
7.62.
Absolutely.
I would concur, 7.62.
You do realize I shot 5.56 in the Army, and I found out that our body armor is rated for 5.56. It's not rated for 7.62. And I found out that if the enemy shoots me, I'm dead.
Because everyone is shooting with a 7.62 besides us. Well, not besides me, because I have two.
7.62.
I have two AKs. I have.
It's supposed to penetrate more.
Conrad. I have two AK-47s, so you don't have to sing to me, all right? I am an AK-47 fanatic, all right?
I can't stand it. When the Army gave me an M16 to go overseas in 2017, I'm sitting there staring at it going, why did you give me a musket?
Now, I'm going to tell y'all what turned me onto the AK platform. A few years ago, when I got my federal job with Triple Canopy, one of the dudes I was, you know, like during our lunch breaks, we would get like 2-hour breaks and we would go shoot at the range. It was free. All you had to do was buy your bullets or whatever. So we would shoot and he let me shoot an AK. A Wasser, full size, grown AK, grown man AK. I fell in love with it. Like, to me, and it's, I don't know why, but to me, the AK-47 shoots softer than my AR-15s. I don't know why. But
AKs are better designed. AKs were meant for people that were ambidextrous. Not only that, it was actually made by a man that had one hand or one arm. And it was to make it easier on him to fire with one arm. So, I mean, it has to be a precision. It has to flow. It has to move nicely for that reason. I mean, it was mainly made for that. I mean, I think I've shot an AK before and it's beautiful. I loved it too.
See, the AK platform and the AR platform are so similar in a lot of aspects, but the AK is far more reliable, easier to maintain, comes apart like that.
Absolutely.
You drop an AR in the mud, you've got a stick.
Listen, and I'm going to be...
You got a stick. So I'm sorry, I know it's American design, I know we love our guns, but we fell through the hole with this.
With that one, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So here it is, right?
I want a scar, I'm not going to lie to you, I want a scar.
You know they have the new scar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the charger handle don't reciprocate.
I want the American Classic M1 Grand World War II design, walnut stock, and I want a scar.
I want that.
Zombie apocalypse happens, you give me that, I can take you out from 1,000 yards and 50 meters.
Absolutely.
You got it, man. Listen.
I think the biggest superiority when it comes between the AR and the AK is distance. You can convert them both to shoot distance, but the 5.56 round is going to do nothing. I can hit a target of 300 meters. I can't kill a target of 300 meters. Okay? Put a proper scope on it, I'll eviscerate you.
Listen, I've had my two AKs for probably a little over a year now. Not one jam. Not one issue. I don't even think I've been to the range 20 times. I don't think I cleaned even one of them yet.
Wow.
Literally. And I'm talking about.
From the range and the Army kicks in. Gotta clean it.
Listen, you can ask him.
I
can't listen.
Help it. I even pull out the white glove and I'm like.
Listen, I have, and my ARs, I clean my ARs. My AKs, because I wanted to test them to see how far they can go without being clean.
Well, dude, I mean,
and I shoot still. Cars, I don't. I've shot brass and I've shot still. Both of them do the job. But listen, man. I want to appreciate you guys for taking out the time, for kicking it with me, talking about something that we're all passionate about. Listen, over here on the Stirring the Pot podcast, listen, we had them conversations that people don't want to have. You know, people don't probably think about having certain conversations because of who it may offend or who may not like you anymore because you had the conversation. But that was the purpose of me creating this platform, to talk about all kinds of stuff that a lot of people just probably don't enjoy. A lot of people don't, you know, the uncomfortable situations. So, listen, this is the Starting the Pot podcast.
Speaking of, M4s and ARs are different. You don't believe me, you do it.
The
amount of people I catch going, that's a military rifle. You really don't know what a rifle is, do you?
So listen, man, you know, I want you guys to keep your family safe. I want you guys to stay prepared for whatever is coming next, whatever is going to happen next in this city, in this state. And if you guys ever need anything, man, reach out. You know, my inbox is always open. I don't know if y'all got my number, but y'all can text me if y'all want. Or whatever. I always know people hiring, all kinds of stuff.
God bless.
But yeah, man, I really appreciate you guys for kicking it with me. I enjoyed the conversation. And that's it, man. You guys, I hope y'all have a blessed night. I hope y'all be safe and enjoy your family, my man. This is the Stirring the Pot podcast.
Thank you. God bless.
And you guys have a good one. All right?
Thank you for having me. Absolutely, so be it. So bless you. Be easy.
All right, man. Peace.
Yeah, thank you. All right.
All right. Alrighty, fellas.
I don't know how to turn it off.
Oh, all right. I'll do it for you. Hold up.
I told you.